Hello there and welcome to our podcast. I'm Cindy Melzer.
I'm Skylar Moss.
And I'm Rachel Weir. Before we get started, I just want to ask you to go down below and hit that subscribe button and continue to follow our YouTube channel.
So, we are very excited to get this conversation going, but first, we want to tell you just a little bit about us. We call ourselves the Plath Addicts. We are addicted to our girl Sylvia. We chose to read this book. It wasn't assigned. And personally, I thought the topic of depression was something so relatable to our lives today, especially in high school, which, you know, it's very sad, but a little bit true. On a happier note, we have a plethora of things to talk about today. Ha, see what I did there? Anyway, we're going to begin our discussion with getting to know more about Sylvia Plath, her background, and this wonderful story she created and lived. Moving on to Rachel, we're going to jump right in with the plot summary.
The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath is the story of a 19-year-old girl named Esther Greenwood and the struggles she faces with depression. The story is set in New York City, 1953, as Esther has just won a paid internship at a magazine company. Esther has many friends at the internship, all who are staying at the Amazon Hotel with her. Her closest friend is Doreen, who dresses much more provocative than Esther and is lazy when it comes to her work at the magazine. As the story unfolds, we learn about Esther's past and the reasons for her depression. Esther's father passed away when she was 9, and her mother oppresses her ideas for Esther's career instead of listening to her desires of becoming a poet. As Esther lives in the city, different aspects of the people in her surroundings begin to chip away at her. Doreen is proved to be an unreliable friend, Esther has complicated relationships with men and is sexually assaulted, and is at one point subjected to electric shock therapy. It is after the treatment that Esther becomes obsessed and persistent on killing herself. After several unsuccessful attempts, she takes dozens of sleeping pills, is pronounced missing for a week, and wakes up in a hospital. She is then transferred to a mental state institution and then a private hospital with the help of novelist Philomena Gina, who funds Esther's college scholarship and who is once committed into an asylum herself. At the hospital, Esther meets many of the patients, including Joan, who later hangs herself in the woods.
We know that was a little heavy, but moving on, we're going to talk about our girl, Sylvia. She was born on October 27, 1932. Her home life was very rough as her father died when she was 8 years old, and she had a bad relationship with him to begin with, but she grew up to be an outstanding novelist and poet. She won a scholarship to Smith College in 1950 and spent time during the summer in 1953 working as an editor for the Mademoiselle magazine. Soon after the internship, she tried to kill herself but recovered in a mental facility and later finished her schooling. After marrying Ted Hughes and then leaving her a couple years later, Plath fell into depression and turned to writing as her support mechanism. She wrote The Bell Jar in 1963, which is based on her life. Plath published the book under a pseudonym, Victoria Lucas, in order to protect the people she portrayed in the book. Soon after writing the novel, she committed suicide, and Ted Hughes, her ex-husband, carried out the legacy of the work. She committed suicide by sticking her head in an oven.
And you can see there's clearly a parallel between Esther Greenwood's life and Sylvia Plath's life.
Wait, did you guys know there was a movie made about her? It's called Sylvia, and Gwyneth Paltrow stars in it, but fortunately, although I wish we could, we don't really have time to get into it. But we recommend you all watch it. It was really amazing.
The book is also represented a lot or referred to in movies or TV shows that have a constant theme of depression or feminism.
Wow. All right, we're going to open the floor up to questions now. Anyone want to start?
I will. So when I was reading the book, I was wondering about how we as readers could differentiate between Esther's mentally unstable thoughts and her sane ones. I was also wondering, do her mental and emotional instability discount every one of her thoughts?
Well, I would say that we are a product of our surroundings. Given everything that Esther undergoes in the Bell Jar, I'm not even sure if I would call her insane as others might. Who would want to be alive, having grown up without real parents, being sexually assaulted, feeling alone and isolated in a city where she doesn't fit in, and having to experience electroshock therapy? I think the Bell Jar challenges the idea of insanity. Because we are looking at everything through the lens of Esther, we cannot make a neutral opinion displaced from her thoughts. Therefore, her insanity and her insanity are the same and vice versa. I found a few quotes that actually could pertain to this question. Esther says, "The silence depressed me. It wasn't the silence of silence. It was my own silence." So in this quote, we don't really know which kind of silence she's talking about, if it's only in her head or if it's actually silent around her. I think this is representative of the question that Skylar just asked.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about being a product of our surroundings, as the book progresses, we see her getting more and more unstable as a result of her past. So this quote I found is, "A small answering point in my body flew toward it. I felt my lungs inflate with the inrush of scenery, air, mountains, trees, people. I thought,
This is what it is to be happy. I plumbed down past the zigzaggers, the students, the experts, through year after year of doubleness and smiles and compromise into my own past. So just what Rachel was saying before, I think it's clear in this quote that her insanity comes from her experiences and from society and from her past.
Uncle Howard Moss published something the other day in the New Yorker about the bell jar.
Really?
Crazy, Skylar.
Yeah, so basically he said the casualness with which physical suffering is treated suggests that Esther is cut off from the instinct for sympathy right from the beginning, for herself as well as for others. Though she is enormously aware of impingements of sensation, her sensations remain impingements. She lives close to the nerve, but her nerve has become detached from the general network. A thin layer of glass separates her from everyone, and the novel's title, itself made of glass, is evolved from the notion of disconnection. The head of each mentally ill person is enclosed in a bell jar, choking on its own foul air.
Wow, I didn't know that was your uncle. I actually read the same article the other day in the New Yorker. When I read it, I was thinking that Esther is really isolated in her own head. She's aware of her own emotions and who she is, but her connection to others is isolated from her ability to empathize. So I really agree with what your uncle said when he said that she lives close to the nerve, but the nerve has become detached from the general network, and there's a thin layer of glass that separates her from everyone. Because I think while she is aware of what's happening, she does not have a connection. She does not feel an emotional connection to her surroundings.
And I think that's just connecting it to the real world. I think that's something that's common amongst people with depression or people with mental disabilities. Like, they know deep down, but they don't want to admit it because it makes it more real when they talk about it or say it out loud.
Yeah, I also think that even if they are aware of how they're feeling or they're aware of the fact that they are depressed, let's say, there's no motivation or incentive to keep them, like, to help them from getting, like, to help them get help. There's nothing to keep them from wanting to do that. So I think that we see that through the book because she does not really seek help. It's forced upon her by her mother when she receives electroshock therapy, and it's also forced upon her when she's put into an institution.
Yeah, and on the topic of motivation, when I was reading, I was thinking about how she has lost her drive, and I was wondering if it's a result of a lack of support or no one supporting her. What do you guys think about that?
I was actually thinking about this, and although I think that Esther likes to be alone and independent, I do think that because she doesn't have anyone to turn to, she has fallen into a deep depression and is now lost. The only thing she has to hold on to her is her work and her scholarship, which isn't enough to keep her motivated anymore. All of her free time in her room has given her time to think about this. And in the book, she states, "The trouble was I had been inadequate all along. I simply hadn't thought about it." The lack of support she receives from others have made her feel unworthy. And because of this, she has lost her drive and is unclear of where her future will lead her.
I think this begs the question or the concept of nature versus nurture, because I think it's a question of whether or not her home or her surroundings is what made her become depressed, or whether or not that's just what she was bound to be in the book. Because there are definitely moments where she thinks to herself, have I always been this way, or have I become this way? So I think it's a question of whether or not people become depressed, or if they always are inevitably bound to be so.
I also think it's a matter of how Esther doesn't know how to love or how to receive love, and she's never experienced it. And I don't know, us Plath addicts always talk about how love makes such an impact on your upbringing and your future and your life as an adult. And when there's a lack of love and support in your life, it is harder for you to succeed because you have trouble connecting with others and loving yourself, which is most important. Self-love is derived from love from others, and without that, you can't be proud of yourself and have no motivation to succeed because you're not believing in yourself.
Yeah, I would also say that toxic family dynamics, they don't give you a basis for what an honest, good relationship is supposed to look like. So she has no way to know whether or not she is doing something correct or incorrect, and that leaves her isolated in her own head.
I agree with everything that was just said. And also, if you could ask Miss Greenwood a question, what would it be?
I think I would ask her if she blames herself for Esther's depression, just because, as I was saying before, a child is a reflection of their parents and or the way their parents raised them. And Miss Greenwood is displayed throughout the book as cold and having no emotion, and she isn't really loving to Esther. And I think Esther believed her mother wasn't capable of warmth or love, and that really sticks with the child. This stuck with Esther. It stuck specifically, what stuck with Esther was how her mother didn't cry when her father passed away. And I mean, personally, I know that is something that would ruin my perception of my own mother or parent or anyone I loved. And I do believe that lack of attention and lack of love and protection from a parent can negatively affect a child. And I know I've seen it firsthand in friends and family of mine. And as a reader, though, I do blame Esther's mom a little, and I wish I could confront her for her wrongdoings. But however, if I were able to talk to her, I don't think she'd be able to recognize the harm she did to Esther and the harm she did to Esther's life. And I just don't think she'd be able to understand that her coldness could have impacted Esther on such a large scale. But I also don't think she'd be able to recognize her coldness at all. And she wouldn't understand how she really didn't show Esther love, because that's just who she is. That's her character. That's her personality. And she's not aware of it.
I also think there's a lack of disconnect when people talk about depression in general. They are labeled with depression, they are labeled with mental illness, and there's nothing that goes beyond that, because parents don't want to look within themselves. They don't want to have to blame themselves and think that they did something wrong. But in fact, that is the upbringing that has an effect on them, and I think it definitely affected Esther's depression.
As a Plath addict, I might be a little biased, but for all of you who haven't yet read The Bell Jar, I would definitely recommend it. The book's main themes are mental illness and sexism, which are two of the most prominent discussion topics in our world today. Mental illness is an issue that everyone needs to be aware of, especially when it is something like depression that you can see in a friend and maybe help even save their life.
I totally agree, Skylar. Plath produced a revolutionary piece of work. This is because she combined concepts of mental illness, feminism, sexual assault, familial dynamics, and the simple feeling of emptiness. The way in which she describes moments alone in her thoughts are what makes the novel so compelling. Silence is suffocating to her. She feels disconnected and out of touch with everyone around her throughout the whole book. It begs the question as to whether or not people are simply born this way, or if they become this way based on their surroundings, as we were talking about earlier. I would say that Plath argues for a combination of both.
I don't know about you, Skylar and Rachel, but I think that's the perfect place to leave our listeners to their own thoughts and wonderings.
Yeah, totally.
We hope you enjoyed listening. We hope we left you with many thoughts, questions, wonderings, and an urge to pick up The Bell Jar and read it on your own time.
At your nearest Barnes & Noble or local bookstore.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Bye!
Bye.